Some of the greatest works of Vincent van Gogh have just been taken down from the walls of the National Gallery in Canberra, where they've been on loan from London's National Gallery. Now, if you've ever been to the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, you would have been moved by some of the letters between Vincent and his younger brother Theo. He's a loyal supporter and art dealer. Vincent's misery when he was mentally ill is, of course, laid bare in those letters, as was Theo's profound concern for him. But missing from the picture is Theo's wife, Vincent's sister-in-law, Jo Bonger van Gogh, and it's only recently emerged how instrumental, how crucial she turned out to be in the sharing and elevation of Vincent's art. I was thrilled by an article I read in the New York Times magazine by Russell Shorto. You might have seen it reprinted in Australia in Good Weekend. Russell is a best-selling US-based writer of narrative history books, and he has a special interest in Dutch themes. In fact, he was given a knighthood by the Dutch government for advancing Dutch-American historical awareness. Thank you for joining us, Russell.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be with you.
First of all, tell me about your special interest in Dutch themes. How did that happen?
It happened because I was living in New York many years ago, and I've learned as a writer that I tend to go to the roots. I'm interested in the origins of things, and I became interested in the roots of New York City. And I knew what everybody knows, that they're Dutch, that New York was once New Amsterdam. And I discovered that there was a great body of material that the Dutch had left behind that was only then being translated and published. And I worked with the translators and eventually wrote a book called The Island at the Center of the World, which is about the Dutch founding of New York.
The funny thing, Russell, is that many people listening to you and I now don't know that story. It has, in fact, sort of faded from historical consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there were a handful of things that Americans know, that New York was once New Amsterdam, that there was this fellow called Peter Stuyvesant who walked around once in lower Manhattan in the 1600s with a wooden leg, and that's pretty much it. In fact, what the Dutch were doing there was very purposeful. They were there for more than 40 years. The English finally took over from them, but what I argue in the book is that the Dutch laid the foundations by bringing tolerance, which they pioneered in the 17th century, and bringing their capitalism, which they pioneered. And if you think about those two things, tolerance and capitalism, that's kind of a recipe for New York City.
Okay, from New Amsterdam to New Holland, I'd like you to take us to Paris in the 1880s and tell me about these two young Dutch brothers in their late 20s. One's a pretty successful art dealer and the other a talented but troubled painter. Tell me about Theo's world first.
Theo has always been seen, I think pretty accurately, as the great supporter of his brother, emotionally, financially. Became a dealer in art in Paris, and he unusually at the time became enamored with the Impressionists. They were still on the outs at the time. They were seen as just really risque and not part of the mainstream. His brother, if you think about it, it's remarkable. One of the many remarkable things about Vincent van Gogh is his career as an artist was only 10 years. So it was rather late in his life that he decided he would turn to art. Before that, he had committed himself to trying to become a minister. So he starts and you know, throws himself into this largely self-taught. And Theo supports him. And as Vincent proceeds, he's discouraged time and again. He has obviously some sorts of mental issues. And he's roaming all over Europe and trying to establish himself, trying to paint, trying to be taken seriously. And Theo is the one who keeps sending him money, keeps encouraging him. And they exchange this remarkable series of letters.
I was well aware of the love between the brothers, but I hadn't realized that Theo was such a progressive art dealer, that here he is, when most wouldn't touch the Impressionist, Theo's in the realm of Gauguin and Pizarro and Toulouse-Lautrec. He really was on the cutting edge.
And therefore appreciated genuinely what his brother was trying to do. He saw it as part of that.
Now, tell me about his wife, Jo, Theo's wife, Jo.
Yeah, she is such a remarkable figure. And you know, most remarkable of all, maybe, is how until now she has not been given credit for her role in making Vincent van Gogh what he became.
Let's begin with her class background. I understand she came from a fairly staid Dutch family.
That's right. Yeah, a fairly staid Dutch family. Very much of there's a Dutch maxim: the tallest nail gets hammered down. And that was kind of represents what their family was like. You don't stand out, and she met Theo van Gogh through a friend, and almost immediately he proposed marriage to her, and she, I think, found that a little strange, and she rejected him. But he persisted, and after about 2 years, she finally accepted, and she left behind a number of diaries, which are really important for understanding her role in all of this.
Well, let's slow down and look at the diaries a little, because from her diary at age 17, which is 5 years before she met Theo, she reveals that she was looking forward to a more interesting life than had been provided to her. Oh, and she was an English teacher in Amsterdam.
That's right. Yeah, she studied languages, and she, as you say, in that first page of her first diary, she gives this hint that she wouldn't be content with having a life that was very staid and sober, that she wanted to do something meaningful with her life. And so that's a little bit of an indication of where she's going to go and maybe why she finally accepts this offer of marriage, because he was an up-and-coming art dealer in Paris, and very quickly then she gets pulled into that world, and she's befriending the Impressionists and living in, surrounded by cafes and brothels and, the whole scene.
I like that line in her diary: "I've actually lived for nothing. I have achieved nothing, great or noble." Well, suddenly she's in a context where that becomes possible. So she enters Theo's art world in Paris, but before they've even had a chance to marry, her brother-in-law has already cut off his ear. Now, some accounts say that was in distress over Theo's engagement to Jo.
Yeah. So as soon as she's with Theo, he is immersing her in, he's giving her kind of a course of modern art. He's teaching her kind of how to see in this new way, which was bewildering to people at that time. And he's also telling her all about his brother and what a genius he is. And Vincent is sending canvases to Theo, hoping that he's going to be able to sell them. So, she's getting a firsthand education in modern art with the canvases of Vincent van Gogh. So it's just this remarkable scene of these two young people in Paris, these two young Dutch people in Paris, and the husband is giving his wife this training.
I wasn't sourcing the argument that Vincent was worried that Theo's devotion to him might now be diverted from your article, but we'd read it in a review of a collection of Vincent's letters. Do you have any knowledge of whether Vincent was worried about being displaced?
Well, I'm sorry, if he was worried about what?
Do you have any knowledge about Vincent being worried about being displaced by Joe?
Oh, I know that I have read that in the biography, the recent biography of them. I don't have anything beyond that. I didn't learn anything beyond that.
Now, this is the period when Vincent's style is changing with, well, the famous Starry Night, which was delivered to Theo and Joe's apartment one day. Tell me about that.
Theo was going along with Vincent in this. I mean, you know, Vincent, of course, is a genius, and he's carving a new path, and his brother was going along with that and encouraging him. And then late in his career, Vincent starts to become more stylized, more, you know, as some of the critics would say, almost cartoon-like in his work. And he sends him this painting, The Starry Night, which is today one of his most beloved works. And when Theo gets it, he writes back. He clearly felt, you know, there was something wrong. Maybe he felt that his brother was really going around the bend, because it is just so, that it was that much more removed from reality. And he asked him, he sort of, you can see him in the letter trying to kind of politely suggest that is more, but he stays closer to what he actually sees, and rather than what he feels in his mind and his heart, that that's you know, he should stay with that. That's more saleable, and I think his wife is kind of going along with that initially.
He wrote back, "I consider you're strongest when you're doing real things," but he did enclose another 150 francs for expenses. Now, Joe gets to meet Vincent when he comes to visit. And she described the two brothers gazing at baby Vincent, that's Joe and Theo's baby, in his crib, with tears in their eyes. But not too long after this, both men would be gone. They died, and I had no idea, within 6 months of each other.
Yeah, it's just astounding, this whole turn of events, and how compacted the time frame is. So she comes on the scene. She marries Theo. She's getting, you know, overwhelmed by the Paris art world, by the two brothers. She meets Vincent, and she's surprised because she's heard so much about how tortured he is. When he comes charging into their apartment, she's like, he's this vivid, stronger. Her first impression, she said, was that he's much stronger than Theo. But then they get word that Vincent has shot himself, and some say it was... he was shot by someone else, but the accepted wisdom is that he shot himself. Theo rushes there only to watch him die. And then within a matter of months, Theo himself dies from complications from syphilis. And suddenly there she is, 21 years old, a widow left with a baby with Theo's son, whom they named Vincent. And she inherits 400 or so paintings by Vincent van Gogh, who was unknown at the time.
So here's Theo, who's, like many of his era, spent a lot of time visiting brothels, so he has this complete physical collapse. I understand from you that he began hallucinating, and his death was absolutely agonizing.
Yeah, that's right. So, and she had to experience all of that, of course. So, again, a really young woman. I mean, I would say a child herself, and suddenly dealing with all of that whole experience and a totally uncertain future, not knowing how to even care for herself.
And she's got 400 paintings and several hundred drawings. And we've got to remind ourselves that Vincent had very little... you know, there's very little awareness of Vincent at that stage, and this diminutive woman would change it.
And that's right. And, you know, it's interesting reading art history, art historians who would then, you know, later look back to try to figure out how did Van Gogh's work become popular. And they tend to focus on the work of other art historians and art critics and dealers. And Joe isn't entirely absent. You'll see they'll make a reference to her, but it's in parentheses or something, you know, something kind of dismissive, like, well, meanwhile, Theo's widow did such and such. So they're not, you know, by temperament, they are not choosing to look at her. And what happened was a researcher at the Van Gogh Museum, starting in 2009, began working on this. He saw these little clues sprinkled throughout a series of letters, and he began to formulate this notion that she was much more important than people had given credit for. And he then spent 10 years researching this and published a soup-to-nuts biography of her in 2019, which thus far is only available in Dutch. But that is the book that gives us this whole reappraisal of how Van Gogh became Van Gogh.
I find it poignant that you wrote that Theo had left her with two jobs, raising their baby, Vincent, and promoting adult Vincent's art. Now, she moves back to Holland. She runs a boarding house. The walls are covered in Vincent's paintings. And she gets more and more absorbed in his letters to Theo. And as you point out, she began reading up on art criticism and mingling with artists and intellectuals. And then, you say, she experienced a sort of epiphany.
Yeah. You have to, art at the time was what you were looking at. This is the way art criticism worked. What you looked at the painting. What she did, she's being credited now with two things. One is making Vincent van Gogh a household name, but beyond that, she's being credited with creating the modern understanding of an artist as a suffering artist, and of art and the artist as bound up together. So what she did, she's left not only with these 400 paintings, she's also left with hundreds of letters between the brothers. And she's trying to figure out, how am I going to promote my brother-in-law's work? She sits down, as you say, she opens a boarding house in a little village in the Netherlands to support herself and her child. And she begins reading these letters. And she becomes so caught up in the figure of Van Gogh. Van Gogh is not only one of the most prolific artists, he is far and away the artist who devoted himself to writing about his life and his art in letters. And she reads about him focusing on his art, his struggles, his mental struggles, his struggles to get accepted, artists he revered like Rembrandt. And she gets a notion that in order to sell the work, she has to sell the man and to sell his tragic story and to link those two things together, which was not a way of seeing art at the time. But now it's almost how we see art and artists.
I'd like to remind the listener that Vincent once wanted to be a minister. And, of course, he lived among peasants to humble himself. And he desperately wanted to make art that reached beyond the cognoscenti and directly into the hearts of common people. Quote, "No result of my work would be more agreeable to me than that ordinary working men should hang such prints in their room or workplace." Now, this strikes a chord with Joe, who has a strong social conscience.
That's right. When she was young, she made a trip to Belgium and spent time with a minister there who took her to see miners and their very difficult life that they lived. And this made a huge impression on her. And she wanted somehow to devote herself to the common man. And ultimately then in her life, in addition to devoting herself to Van Gogh's work, she becomes a member of the Dutch Labor Party, essentially, and she becomes a great promoter of women's suffrage. And so her whole life she's devoted to these causes and sees in Van Gogh's work and in his letters that he's a kindred spirit, that he too is trying to, he doesn't want to appeal in his art to the gallery owners. He wants to appeal to these kind of ordinary workers, laborers, the kind of people he loved to paint as well. So that she, all of that as well becomes part of her mission.
Well, that's what drew me to her, and it's why we're having this conversation now, because you know, here she is. She visits workers at that nearby coal mine. That fuels a lifelong dedication to causes ranging from workers' rights to, as you say, female suffrage. And, of course, she counted herself as one of the ordinary people.
That's right. And she recognized that Vincent felt exactly the same way. And so she really... In reading these letters, she felt that she was only now, because she only met him once during his life, that she was now coming to know him, to truly know him. And she was moving back and forth then from the letters to the painting and getting it, truly getting it. And then that is the package that she decides to sell. So what she does is she starts to go to, she knew an art critic in this village where she lived, and she went to him and presented these paintings to him. And he was a critic who, like Theo, had been very much disposed to the avant-garde. But Van Gogh was, at the time, and it's hard to imagine, but at the time, he was so new that even a critic like that was at first repelled. He found the work to be vulgar, he later said. And she had to keep pushing him. And she said, in her diary, she said, "I'm not going to rest until I win him over." And she actually at one point then hands him an envelope full of Vincent's letters and says, "Read these, you'll understand." And she gets him to think along with her and to feel along with her and to see the art and the artist as all of a package.
So she becomes Vincent's agent after his death. She meets with critics, dealers, writes letters, organizes exhibitions, and as you say, great resistance to his style, but by gosh, she perseveres. And meanwhile, her own life is evolving as well. She's raising Vincent Jr., and she falls in love with another painter.
Yeah, she fell in love with a painter named Isaac Israels, who's quite renowned these days. Then she realized that he wasn't interested in marriage, and so she broke that off and then actually married yet another Dutch painter, which seems to have been sort of she did it for, I think, propriety's sake or for convenience. So I don't sense that there was a great love or passion there. But the work of her life then remained Vincent. The two Vincents, obviously raising her son, but also promoting the other Vincent. Hans Lauten, the researcher who wrote the biography, titled it "All for Vincent." And I think he was doing a little bit of a play because her whole life was devoted both to her son Vincent and to her brother-in-law.
I mentioned earlier that she'd been an English teacher. She spoke a number of languages, which would have helped her with her wheeling and dealing. And she's bloody good at wheeling and dealing.
That's right. And she learned the tricks of the trade as she's getting galleries to accept the work. She learns, for example, that she always kept the best, what she thought was the best work for herself. So she wanted to sell paintings, but she kept the best. But what she would do is she would give them a number of paintings to sell, and then she would also give them on loan some of the really top works because she wanted the show to sparkle. She wanted those to be the attraction. And then they would help the whole show to succeed. And then it's
but
all.
She had another technique. She had another technique. There was an exhibition in Paris in 1908, and she sends 100 works, but stipulates that a quarter of them were not for sale, which makes them all the more tantalizing.
Exactly. Yeah. So she became she taught herself how to become a very savvy salesperson in this very refined world, in the fine arts trade.
I understand that particular dealer begged her to reconsider, but she held firm. So She had a tendency, did she not, to doubt herself, but she must have gained enormous confidence.
Early on, I mean, throughout her diaries, especially, you know, when she's younger, she's constantly doubting herself. She thinks she's ugly. She doesn't know what she's doing. And but as she gains acceptance for Vincent, which reaches a climax in 1905, she arranges what is still the largest exhibit of Van Gogh's works ever. And it is met overwhelmingly with acclaim. She develops confidence in this method of hers. And at that large exhibit, she does everything. She rents the gallery spaces herself. She buys bow ties for the whole staff to wear. She has her son, Vincent, who's now a teenager, write out all the invitations to people. So she manages everything. And that's the kind of the hallmark of her approach. She's going to manage all the details.
Now, Joe's son, Vincent, doesn't want the world to know of his mother's later relationships with another Dutch painter. He didn't want the diary's contents to be well known.
That's right. And as a result, so she dies in 1925, he puts her diaries under lock and key, and that's how they remain until 2009, when Hans Lauten, the Dutch researcher, asks the family. He knows that they exist, and he asks for permission to use them for this biography that he's going to write, and they grant him permission. Because, of course, this is all, you know, the idea that her son's concerns about her having a relationship with another painter and so on, that's all in the distant past by now. So he gets access to it, and that really unlocks for him, for Hans Lauten, the researcher, this world of Jo and her her doubts, her journey, the revelation of putting the letters and the paintings together, and the step by step how she moved forward in selling Vincent van Gogh.
I mentioned in introducing you that we've had the Botticelli to Van Gogh exhibition just been at our National Gallery, but the industry that has been built up around his work is phenomenal, wasn't it? Every type of merchandise, every print, wallpapers, on and on.
And, you know, in working on this article and then since it has come out, it is remarkable. I have been reminded over and over, there is nothing like the Van Gogh phenomenon. Everybody I know, from the plumber who kind of came to my house to fix our sink when I was and I was having conversation and told him what I was working on, to professors and to my mother, telling her, everyone not only knows Van Gogh but feels that they have a personal relationship with him. I don't think there's any other artist in history that you can say that about.
He is the megastar, isn't he? Absolutely dominating in the way that, later Picasso would become.
Yes, exactly. But I would say that Van Gogh, people have more of a personal connection to Van Gogh than even to Picasso or to Da Vinci or, you know, Rembrandt, whoever you can name in that same tier. And you have to say that we owe some of that to her, because if she had not done what she did, would this have happened? Would this phenomenon have happened?
Russell, we're running out of time. I'm going to have you back, as you know, because I want to discuss your next project, which is a book about your grandfather, the mobster, a small-time Sicilian mobster in a small town in Pennsylvania. I've been talking to Russell Shorto, the author of Narrative Histories and a contributing writer to New York Times, for whom he wrote about Joe Van Gogh.